Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
Welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And once again, Brett is AWOL.
Oh, Brett.
Playing hooky or babysitting or drinking. We don't know which, but we'll talk to him later.
Doesn't matter. The effect is still the same. Unhappy MacDam.
Does this mean you have to double up on the snark to make up for him, or do we just stay mellow?
You know, I think that's going to depend how it goes with the deep geeking tonight. Really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hey, I've got a bit of news here that people may or may not have been aware of. And, this was sent to us. Gary sent us this and a couple other people. This actually comes back in, early March. Melissa Gilbert and Bruce Boxleitner split up after 16 years.
I know.
Yeah, I know. It is sad. And the only thing here is two items here. They did make their last appearance together in December when they attended the premiere of Tron Legacy. Mm-hmm. As says here, the little thing that I'm reading, I've Googled a handful. They're all pretty much the same. Says the reason for the divorce is unknown at this time. Gilbert requested privacy during this difficult time, saying, "We have loved each other for a very long time." What it doesn't indicate is whether or not Bruce drove his car through the bay window of the house.
What?
Well, I was thinking like, or his white star through the roof.
Ah. That was just, yeah that fell flat.
I will stretch it for it. Oh, well.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Well, Gary was wondering whether shadows were involved.
Ah.
So, you know, could be.
Shadows were definitely involved with that joke. I was going to say. We'll just let it go.
They're all about chaos, but I can't say they have any greater sense of humor than the Vorlons ever did.
Shadows as the practical jokers of the universe. I'm not seeing it.
No, I'm not seeing it either. Not so much. You see a shadow battle crab ripple in from hyperspace, and the big flag comes out and says, "Bang." Wouldn't work.
Nope. There's no rippling in space.
Nope. Space, no one can see you ripple.
Nope.
Or see you drink ripple.
Alrighty then. Moving on.
Yeah, right.
To happier news. We get to continue with the Crusade geeking.
Yes.
This week. And hopefully we will soon have. I'm really trying to stretch out this Crusade geeking because I would really like to have another Crusade book. Script book come out before we get to the end of Crusade. That would just be kind of perfect, you know?
We're looking at you, the Jason Davis.
Yes, we are. Feel free to tease me with when the next date of the next book is coming out. I'll appreciate that a little bit. Thank you. What else do we have coming up? I am working on Crusade cast member interviews.
Good.
I am. Haven't gotten any yeses or nos or who are you agains yet. So
yeah, right.
At this point, silence is a good result. But yeah, I figured we'd start at, I don't know, who would you want to talk to first?
I would like to talk to David Allen Brooks. I you know, and we'll get into this with our geeking tonight on our episode. Max Eilerson is a very interesting character, and yes. You know, to have the stones to play the ship's assigned asshole has got to be, you know, that's got to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. And it, you can tell from what we see on film that he enjoyed much of that.
Yes.
Okay, we'll see if we can get him first. We'll work on that. Whoever says yes first is who we talk to first. But yeah, Eilerson, David Alan Brooks is high up on my list, and not merely because we share the same last name.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so we will take a quick break and come back with Patterns of the Soul.
Are you a geek and a parent? Or maybe you want to be a parent one day? Well, then come on over to howtogrowyourgeek.net. We have suggestions of games that you can play with your kids, reviews of television shows that you'll enjoy watching with them, and other ways for you to share this fantastic hobby. So come on over to howtogrowyourgeek.net and join the party. We're waiting for you.
Digging down to the minutest arcani of the B5 universe, this is Deep Geeking.
Patterns of the Soul.
Yes, directed by Tony Dow, who directed many episodes for Babylon 5, written by Fiona Avery.
Yeah. This episode, for me, was... I had to watch it a second time.
Oh yeah,
I had to see it a second time back then to appreciate what was happening.
In what way? I'm just curious.
Well, let's go over the quick and dirty. The quick and dirty, a general whose name slips my mind.
Thompson. Right.
General Thompson gives Excalibur orders to proceed to Theta 49.
Yeah, 47, I think. 40, yeah.
And acquire all of the people, all of the earthlings living there, and bring them back to Earth because they're infected. They belong on Earth with everybody else. They need
ostensibly.
To be, yes. That's the reason given initially. And, you know, when high brass like that is evasive, you know there's something else going on. But
of course.
Of course. So Eilerson gets the news that they're proceeding to a different location than he thought they were going to, and he's not happy about it because there's nothing cool on this new planet to look at. Damn it, he wanted to go to the other place.
Well, he's also getting his butt chewed by his boss.
Oh, yeah. Like, give us more stuff that we can exploit, work on. And at the new planet, they do indeed find humans who are, what's the word I'm going to use? Reluctant.
Yes.
To leave their new planet. But we also find out that there's other people living on this world.
Yep.
Who turn out to be. Let's just say Darina has a very close connection to them, and she feels very protective of them because they are her people. In the, what else? I'm missing a whole lot here. Yes. Gideon.
Well, go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, Gideon complains about the nanite shield about being used.
Yeah.
The whole the whole captains and rats thing. We'll have to talk
that
about
was,
that.
Yes, that was cute.
That was very, very funny. And the people on the planet are reluctant to give their blood samples to be tested for the virus. And as Dr. Chambers discovers some unusual characteristics in their vital signs, their blood, this leads to the discovery of some, I believe the what Robert Black said were illegal enhancements.
Yes.
And
turns out they were guinea pigs.
Yes.
For Earth Force.
In more ways than one.
Yes.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Screwed?
Yeah, that too. Orphaned Black Projects.
Yes.
That's what I'm looking for. Orphaned Black Projects.
Right. And then they made a break for freedom before the Drock showed up.
Getting out just in time?
Yes.
Only to find out that they had been infected anyway.
Well, you know what? They didn't make a break for freedom. Let me take that back. They were given hush money and dropped on that planet to isolate them.
Well,
yes, because Robert Black mentions that. And the fact is that, well, no, you know what? They were given hush money to be quiet, and they did make a break for freedom because the last shipment of food that they got, they picked up en route. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Got it. They were, we can talk more about this, but yeah, they were leaving under less than optimal conditions.
Yes.
And suffice to say, lots of people are fighting over whether or not they should stay, whether or not they should go, and they bum rush Dr. Chambers. How dare they?
I know, that's what I'm saying.
That's rude. I'm sorry, that's just rude. But suffice it to say, Gideon becomes Gideon. Gideon plays Gideon. Yep. In, how did he put it? He'll palm a card off the
table.
Deck now and then.
Yep.
Yep. And
finds out why the general is so interested in this group of people.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but manages a little bit of underhanded subterfuge that we have to give him a golf clap on to get them out of it.
Yep.
And then the aftermath is secrets and who should you keep them from? Who should you, you know, this, the, that theme
who do you
of
trust
that whole episode. Yeah. Is who do you trust? Who do you serve and who do you trust? That,
yes.
that was what it took me a second watch to see the tie in. Who do you serve? Who do you trust?
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay. This has a little bit more under the surface than I had initially seen. And I kind of liked that. So.
Yeah, and I think the episode title is intriguing, Patterns of the Soul, because that implies, as I interpret it, that the characters react to a situation in a certain way, and those are the patterns they follow. And I think it's intriguing to see how some characters follow their pattern and others start to question those patterns.
And
so, yeah, go ahead.
For what I was seeing, it was more, I don't know if it was patterns of the soul, but patterns of behavior. And then realizing at the end that nobody had all of the information at hand. So how could they make decisions to go against their patterns when they didn't have all the information? I thought that was,
well, you know, it's interesting you say that.
Yeah. It was a surprising revelation to me. So,
yeah, because there's an early scene between Eilerson and Gideon where they have a conversation that touches on that, where Eilerson basically says, what I love about working for the company is they just tell me only what I need to know. And if something goes wrong, well, it's not my fault because I didn't know any different. You know, in that sense, it's plausible deniability. And it's that lack of information that Eilerson perceives as freedom from guilt. Whereas Gideon knows that if he doesn't have all that information, he can't make appropriate decisions. And it does reflect on how he handles that situation. And as he hacks his way into, well, you know what? Hack isn't the right word, because he had appropriate access to get into Earth Force databases. But he knows that he doesn't have all the information. As you said before, when an Earth Force general calls up and is acting shifty, you know something's going on. And of course, the big giveaway is get all the information and then delete it.
Yeah, that...
You know, that's the tip-off.
how can a general even consider that? Yeah, when you get all the information and after you've sent it to me, I want you to delete it and destroy it. That's like telling the five-year-old, yes, here's a jar of fresh chocolate chip cookies. Don't touch them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And you know who you're dealing with in Gideon. So whereas, you know, the pre-Clark Sheridan might have followed that order, the post-Clark Sheridan would have been a little leery and saying, what are you talking about here? But Gideon, drop of the hat. What's he hide?
Right, exactly. Okay, now let's start digging around. Yeah, and of course he finds that, you know, there's these, as it turns out, with information that Chambers discovers that she's pawing through their garbage, which I thought was really great, really great scene. They find that the these soldiers were deliberately infected. They picked up some food that is traced back to a manufacturer on the same planet that was the operating base for these black ops projects. And so they do have the Drock virus, but they were deliberately infected because they'd left Earth before the Drock made their attack. Mm-hmm. So
the only way to get them back to Earth under Earth Force control was to infect them.
Right. And to send... Excuse me, to send Excalibur out after them, because I guess they were afraid of what they were going to say or blab, even though these guys just wanted to be left alone.
Mm-hmm. I can see why you would send the Excalibur out there, because the Excalibur's mission is to uncover everything they can about the Drock virus. Because they have the nanite shield, they are more equipped to interact with somebody who's infected just in case. And I'm guessing they have the ability to, well, no, because if they had brought them back, they probably would have escorted them back on their own shuttle, because you wouldn't want to bring those people on the ship, because then everybody in the ship would be infected.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, I don't know. You've already dealt with having Stephen Franklin on board. So, you know, you just put him in a, you keep him in the shuttle, and you lash the shuttle to the exterior of Excalibur, and you haul him back that way.
Does Excalibur have tractor beams?
You know, I don't recall that they ever showed that sort of technology.
Because
they have tractor beams, like tractors that will run you over and kill you.
No, because I remember the Minbari ship.
Yeah.
Have the ability to latch on and pull that in. And I don't recall if the White Stars had a little bit of that ability too. And Jason is saying no, Excalibur did not have that. So,
and Jason would know.
Jason would know.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so they would have that would have been an escort. That would have been escort duty.
Sure.
Not dragging them in by the hair of, you know, the back of the head.
Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah, they could have put him in the hold. But either way, any way you slice it, you know, the thing that really intrigues me, that I really like, again, about Gideon's character, is he wants to know why they're being diverted to do this. General Thompson doesn't give him anything and basically says, you're my subordinate, you're just going to follow orders, you don't have any reason to question it. And like you said, they don't understand who they're dealing with here. And Gideon does proceed to follow those orders, despite the fact that he knows there's something not quite right. You know, when he goes down to the planet with Dr. Chambers and Dorina, you know, he tells these guys, look, you know, we got to check you for blood. We got to do these things. I understand you want to stay, but you got to be ready to go. You know, it's only once he starts digging in and finding out what's really going on. It's not that he's not sympathetic, but he realizes that these guys have been they're getting the shaft, and he can't stand for that. You know, and at the end, after they've done the ruse with the exploding shuttle, and they show that film to General Thompson, and he's satisfied that the problem's been taken care of, Gideon's comment to Robert Black is, look, my goal is to make to see if you're infected and make sure you don't spread that infection. As far as I'm concerned, I've taken care of that.
Yep, job done.
I have, right, exactly. I have followed the assignment given to me.
Yep, followed, what is it, the spirit of the law, not so much the letter of the law.
Right, exactly.
It's like, he just told me to make sure you don't go anywhere. I blew up your ship, you can't go anywhere. End of story.
Right, exactly.
I love how he always manages to find a loophole where no one ever, ever, ever intended a yes. loophole to exist.
You know, but the other part of that, too, is that he doesn't just put the loophole there. He also, I can't find the right analogy, but as he tells Robert Black and his people, okay, we're putting a surveillance satellite. That's to put the quarantine in place. That should keep people from showing up. You know, they'd be warned off. But the same token, it's going to tell me whether or not you guys try to leave. And you guys are not going to leave. And if I find out that you do, there's going to be trouble. You know, and it's not that Gideon's put himself on the line. It's like, I've done this thing for you. I've given a new chance. Don't screw it up. And that's one of the things about Gideon that I really like. He's not just... oh, I've done the right thing. We've saved the school kids. It's like, we saved the school kids, but y'all are on probation. Yeah, I like that. Now, the next wrinkle, of course, is that Darina finds a lost tribe of her people.
Mm-hmm.
And they are obviously infected with the Drak plague.
Because of coming in contact with the infected colonists.
Right. And they got a year to live.
And the one, I had a problem with how Dr. Chambers explained that.
In what way?
She said it seems to be working faster on their physiology than on human physiology. She uh-huh. didn't state the obvious that that virus had been used to wipe out her home planet years ago.
Oh,
so
was it a virus?
It hit, yeah, it had already been.
I thought it was Shadow Planet Killers that did all that.
Was it Planet Killers or the virus?
I think it was the Shadow Planet Weapons that blasted, because it is a blasted world. It's not Xander Prime isn't a garden spot of the galaxy anymore. It's a dead hunk of rock.
So I wonder if they were intending to use the virus, because the only way the virus works that fast is if it had been customized to them already. That was the one thing, what they said. They said yeah. 5 years. They had said 5 years because they said that was how long it would take it to adapt completely to human physiology, and then people would start dying faster.
Right. That's human physiology. That's not Darina and the field people physiology.
But how do we know that it hadn't already been adapted to them? That it makes no sense to work on one humanoid physiology 5 times faster than another. I could see 2 times faster, but 5 times faster?
I don't know. I hear what you're saying, but that never occurred to me. And frankly, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me about it isn't the science behind it. I think what bothers me is that it ratchets up the pressure on our characters, and we run into that same old bugaboo. If we had gotten a full year of Crusade or 2 years of Crusade, would we have revisited Theta 47 to find the corpses? Don't know. As it stands now, it's just yet another... I don't know, a plot thread there that remains unresolved.
Mm.
you know, and loses a certain amount of impact because you know you're looking at your Crusade disc collection.
Yeah.
And I got four discs.
Yep. Yeah, that would have been
Because I can see that could have been a really cool thing to come back, because Dr. Chambers promises, you know, Darina after their intense conflict down on the planet.
No, see, I can't see that episode working. You know why? It would have been a Crusade version of Confessions and Lamentations.
Well, right.
And I can't see them rehashing that. I just can't see it. But Jason has something very interesting that I may not have remembered.
Huh?
But the virus was initially intended to be used on Minbar, not Earth. That's why it's taking so long to adapt. They only dropped it on Earth because the planet killer was destroyed. So they had intended to infect Minbar, I guess, to make them suffer longer for their hand in destroying the shadows,
right,
and just wipe out Earth altogether with the planet killer. But they had to switch tactics once the planet killer got destroyed. So presumably, since the virus was customized for Minbari physiology, there's a chance that infected Minbari would have only had a year to live, or 18 months.
Sure.
Interesting.
Well, then that the implication there is that perhaps Darina's people are physiologically closer related to Minbari than human. So I don't know. Anyways,
I don't know. We can speculate.
I know, and that's it becomes frustrating after a while.
It does, because you continue to see how much more story there was left untold, and you begin
to
curse the elder gods for their capriciousness in ripping this show from our bosoms too soon.
I take a slightly different stance. Is that this is year one, which is all set up. So at the time when Crusade aired, for the most part, I don't want to say I gave a lot of episodes a pass. It's not that I didn't enjoy it, but it was more that I was willing to be patient with what would appear to be either flaws or, you know, plot points or what have you, with the thought that, well, okay, you know what? I know this is going to be resolved somehow, and I'll be really amazed with it, because that Straczynski's track record on Babylon 5. This is all going to come together in some really cool fashion. And the fact that it didn't happen, the whole thing just kind of feels half finished. You know, there's not resolution, even though a number of these are standalone episodes for the most part. There's still it just becomes frustrating to talk about it. Here's another example. One of the things that I think was very significant in this episode is, as I mentioned at the top of our podcast, Eilerson is the ship's resident ass. You know, he paints himself in very broad strokes as the man who's interested in profit, and that's the driving force, and everything else is just people hiding behind their own pretenses. And he's not pretentious, because he knows what's really important, and that's, you know, profit and discovery. Chambers cannot tolerate the man. That's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes no bones about it. When he shows up in Med Lab toward the end of the episode to talk to her about why she's not revealing in her general report about Darina's, the lost tribe of Darina's people, you know, she doesn't even bother to try to be polite to him. Yet at the end of the episode, when Max is filing his report and he mentions that, well, you know, the official ship's record shows that there's nothing there, but let it be known that there is a group of people there, some indigenous types. They need to be investigated. Send a ship out. And then he deletes the entry. There's like this glimmer of conscious that's starting to bud in Max. And I liked it. It worked. It's awkward for him to have to deal with that. And again, it's one of those cases, like, I would have loved to have seen what happened with Max Eilerson's character.
Mm-hmm. If that had happened later in the series, I think it would have rung a little bit more true to me. But I don't know, just how something about that scene, I don't know if it was too short. I don't know if we didn't get it to see enough. Maybe if he had had a different look on his face when he's reading the first report, and you see him saying the words, and then you see him, you know, the look on his face starts to tell you that he's having misgivings about even speaking them. If I had seen a little bit more of that, I think it would have been, I don't know, just something about it fell just very, very slightly flat for me.
Uh-huh.
Like,
okay.
Like, I don't know, like it happened too fast. I don't know. Maybe that's what I'm complaining about.
I hear you.
But I like what we see later. I think the episode of is Rules of the Game when they're on B5 and Eilerson needs help with his ex-wife's problem.
Yes.
Yes. I like the contrast between Eilerson and Chambers in this episode and then later in that episode.
Yeah.
It's just there's a shift in their dynamic, you know, instead of being completely antagonistic towards each other, she realizes that he's asking for help, not for himself, but for someone else.
Right.
And this is a total shock to her.
Yeah.
So I see that little growth arc of Eilerson. And,
yeah. And I liked his Legos. Take a look at his quarters at the beginning when he's talking with the IPX official. To the right of the screen, it looks like a little tower built out of Lego bricks. That's everyone's homework and assignment for the week. Come back and send in voicemails about Max's Lego set. You know, one other thing that struck me watching this episode that kind of came home to me, and it's all through Crusade, mm-hmm. is the open door policy on the bridge for people who are not Earth Force to ask, what's going on? You know, they just like walk onto the bridge going, what's going on?
This is what happens when you have, you know, they were experimenting with open space bridges. Because you have, the bridge literally is round.
Yeah.
You have...
Hallways just run into it. There are no doors. It's just
you have a war table in the middle of the freaking room with five different hallways leading to it.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. It amuses me.
Are there even doors at the end of the hallways? Because I don't remember ever seeing doors.
No, they aren't. You're walking down the hallway and it ends on the bridge.
How do you secure CNC in Excalibur in case of an emergency?
Well, you just don't have emergencies. Duh. Come on now.
I don't think that's going to work.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, seriously. What happens if, you know, the ship gets boarded?
Uh-huh.
You know, you have out of control AIs.
Yep.
Coming through the hall. How do you secure the bridge if you've got five long hallways directing you right there to the middle of literally the command center of the ship?
That's when you hope that Galen's hanging around.
And Galen would sit there and say something like, yeah, this is a very bad design.
That's right.
So what's the line from Buckaroo Banzai? It looks like one of our thermal pods, but it's a very poor design.
Right. Sorry. Hey, Galen wasn't in this episode, by the way. I thought that was kind of intriguing.
Was not.
And we saw just very little bit of Lieutenant Matheson. We saw Dr. Chambers as action hero of a sort. I mean, she was much more involved with the goings on. Mm-hmm. You know, Dorina calls her down to the cave where Dorina's people are hanging out and being groovy. And, of course she gets taken hostage, but that's not, you know, it's not like the helpless, oh my goodness, I've been taken hostage. You know, she tries to put up a fight as best she can, but she's mm-hmm. a doctor. So it's not like she's got a whole lot of,
Well, she did try to pull a jiu-jitsu move, but she couldn't move his arm. You know, right. Did you see that? She grabbed yes. it and tried to do the move, and it's like, okay, I'm trying to move a tree trunk here. What's going on?
Right. Yeah.
She's a little surprised. It's like, wait a minute, this move works on everybody. No.
Yeah.
This is a cybernetic arm. You're not moving that.
Yeah. Not at all.
Nope.
Not at all. And poor Jean-Claude Van Damme, he lost his girlfriend to the operation.
That was not Jean-Claude Van Damme.
No, but
I can't.
That was the first thing I thought when I saw him.
No, he was the bad guy from that awful Stallone movie, Cobra.
Don't think I ever saw that awful Stallone movie. Thank you very much.
You're probably better off never having seen that. He also played a vampire in that series, Kindred. The Kindred.
Yeah, whatever. Everybody's playing a vampire.
Oh, this was like 20 years ago before vampires, which is really cool. I mean, this predates Buffy and Angel, so.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, the series got canceled because the lead actor died in a motorcycle accident. So there's only like 14 episodes of that too. So, yeah, I know way, way too much.
Yeah, trivia that way. I'm with you. So, what else do we have to say about this episode? We like the conversation. Like the conversation of between Dorina and Gideon and the shuttle back up. And that was, you know, the conversation about who do you trust and who do you serve, mm. you know, and she, you know, Gideon asks her, it's like, you know, why don't you tell me, why don't you trust me? And she's like, I don't trust your generals. And Gideon points out, I don't trust them either. But I'm not them.
Yep. I thought that was, he's like, I'm not asking you to trust them. I'm asking you to trust me that I won't tell them.
Right.
Big difference.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and Dorina's little sort of apology, she comes in. It's like, I said some things in the heat of the moment I probably shouldn't have. And Dr. Chambers is like, you're forgiven. She knows what she's trying to say. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those episodes. It was a setup episode for bigger things, you know, as we now understand the general shape of what Crusade should have been. You know, a great deal of it would have been Earth Force shenanigans going on, and this is the first indication of that in the Crusade story. Any last thoughts?
No.
All right.
I think we're done. We will. Do you have any more emails for us?
We've got a few more emails. Yeah, we got some emails here we can read.
Let's take a quick break and come right on back.
Here at the Center of Podcast Studies, we know the dangers of podcasting and what you should avoid. Here's a sample.
All right, it works.
Yes, I got it back. I got every bit of it.
It's small, fast, does hex and block edits. But
oh, that's a good idea. I didn't think about that last time.
We're your geek morning show.
That's the thing about podcasts. We can be up anytime.
Don't listen to this while operating heavy machinery. You could spit out your water. I wonder what you'd get. Okay, I'm going to stop right there and make my comment.
Hey, wake me up when you're done.
I completely missed that one.
The writers of Back to the Future didn't see that one coming. Thanks, man. I had to think about that.
For your own research materials, visit chuckchat.com/technorama. Protect yourself.
More communication from our eager and curious and sometimes argumentative listeners. I don't
They're
know if
not argumentative. I am.
Yeah, we're argumentative. We encourage discussion. We encourage a varied discourse amongst our listeners and other B5 fans.
Yeah, there we go. I got a email here. This comes to us from Julian, and I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his last name because I'm sure I'll mangle that. Julian writes, found the show just under a year ago and started with episode zero and listened to them all. I wanted you to know how much I enjoy the show, but I tell you, after listening to 200 plus episodes over 8 to 9 months, it makes the show a daily show. Unfortunately, when you get caught up, it becomes weekly and it can get depressing. Laugh out loud. Anyways, a quick question about the triluminaries. There were three. Could they have had three different functions? One to make Minbari to human, one for human to Minbari, and the third to detect someone who's changed.
Hmm.
Now that I'm caught up, I look forward to challenging Gary for comments. Well, good luck on that one, Julian, because you also have to overtake Neil as well, and I think Father Beast is ranking up there. You know, that's a new take on the Triluminaries, because at no point in time do they ever indicate, whether Triluminary number one converts one way, Triluminary two the other way, and the third one gets Netflix and Hulu, I don't know.
If they had made an effort to distinguish that there were different triluminaries, or the triluminaries they had different behaviors, I could actually go with that.
Yeah, the other thing I would say too is that, there's no indication that when Delenn makes her little structure there, you remember the one member of the Great Council
brought it to her, right?
She brought her, but there's no indication whether it's just she needs one to complete it, or if she needs that one to complete the set in order to complete the device, or what.
No, we don't see all of them in the device that builds her chrysalis. We just see the one, right?
Right. Yes. So maybe you just need the one to do whatever. Well, maybe that's part of what Julian's thinking.
What did they do with what did she do with that one after she came out of it? Do we know?
Put it in the dishwasher, I guess. No, we don't know. We don't know. And I'm now recalling, now I'm going to have to go back and watch War Without End because I don't recall seeing it. But supposedly in Zathras's collection of boxes, one of the things he has is a box of the Triluminaries, because the implication is the Triluminaries came from the Great Machine. Oh, see, now that gets the whole time thing in there, and now it gets really messy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's one of those, if you start thinking, dude, Zathras' head starts hurting.
Yes, definitely. Zathras' head, not the only one that starts hurting, trying to keep track of these things.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, well, are we finished trying to to puzzle out the unpuzzleable?
Yes.
Okay. Joe Carfley sends this in to us. He says, I was going to call in, but I didn't want to take about a half hour explaining why I like these episodes. This is his top five B5 episodes. Number five, Coming of Shadows. Number four, The Fall of Centauri Prime. Number three, Severed Dreams. Number two, Zahadum. And number one, Sleeping in Light. Joe, you got a freebie, because Sleeping in Light comes off the list. That's on everybody's list, so it doesn't count. So if you want to send an email or call in with your replacement, feel free. Good choices, all of those, no doubt. Although somehow I would replace Zahadum with In the Shadow of Zahadum. But that's just me. Again, going back to the criteria of rewatchability, I just think that In the Shadow of Zahadum is one of those episodes that indicated that the show was going to go in a different direction than what we thought it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like really, really cool.
For some reason, I am flashing back to the Narn Bat Squad in The Rock Cried Out.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Don't know why. That scene just popped into my head right now. Not sure why.
All right, last one here. This comes to us from Todd Haney in North Carolina. Did you guys see the killer Chekhov Bester statuette that Walter whipped out at the end of his Raw Nerve interview on Monday? That was the 14th of March. Too cool. Todd, I thought I had that set to record, and apparently it didn't. So I'm catching one that's coming up. That's rerunning like at 8 a.m. So I think the problem is it ran into a conflict and it got preempted by three other shows my daughter's recording.
Oh, okay.
I am curious to see it. I know it's the main thrust is going to be Star Trek, but I'm just curious. Well, apparently there might be a B5.
So what did he do? He pulled out like a Bester action figure or something?
I have no idea. This is just what Todd says. So to answer the question, did you guys see the killer Chekhov Bester statuette that Walter whipped out at the end of the interview? The answer would be no.
No, I missed that.
But I am looking forward to it. And let me tell you what, I did see the – this is why I set it to record. I saw the commercial for the upcoming interview, the Raw Nerve. Let's say that Walter is no longer wearing his hairpiece.
I did see that.
Wow. That was shocking, actually.
There was a special on Biography Channel back in January, I believe, where Shatner sat down with all of the original cast members, the original series cast members, right, to talk with them. I think it was like a 1 or 2 hour deal.
Missed that one. Yeah. I'm curious to see it. I know it's not going to be as, I mean, I know those two had a contentious relationship, or maybe really Walter had more contentious and Shatner just was clueless, but I know that they've kind of patched things up a bit, but I'm curious to see that. And again, I'm curious to see how much he brings up Babylon 5, because I really think that's where people recognized exactly what a quality actor that Walter Koenig is.
Yeah. And what do we need to do to get Walter a star, for crying out loud?
I don't know. Narn Bat Squad.
There you go.
Just go and start beating people. So that's it for our email for this time around.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I have no more news except that Jason continues to revel in teasing me about when the Crusade books are coming out, as in not telling me one single thing.
Jason.
I know. He's enjoying this way too much. And I'm letting him. I don't know why. But yeah, as soon as we are allowed to tell you, I will tell you. Trust me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I can't wait to get my hands on the rest of these books. I really, really can't wait to find out what else they're planning with continuing B5's legacy in either print or electronic books, honestly.
Or what might happen in April.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he makes an announcement on April 1st, I'm going to be very upset.
That would be funny.
Let me just put that out in the record, okay?
And you know, we do have these alternative television series production options coming up. Netflix is producing a TV series, for crying out loud.
Are they?
Who knows? Maybe next 2 or 3 years, things will loosen up and we can get alternative funding, alternative production routes. I don't care. We can get more stuff. I don't care. Yes, I do.
Please.
I do care. I want more and I want it now. Sorry.
Yeah, but make it good, damn it.
Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe in May we'll get some good news from JMS about whatever secret B5 project Warner Brothers has whispered into his ear. That'd be either some really cool or some really scary pillow talk.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought of it like that, but I did. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
no, I'm with you.
Anyway, that'll do it for this episode, unless you have something else.
Nope, that's it.
That's it. Alrighty then. As always, come visit our website, BabylonPodcast.com. Add your comments to the discussions going on all these episodes we talk about. FarpointForums.com. You can join in the more detailed discussions over there. If you want to send in your own email to Tim for him to read on the show, that email address is BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. And as always, our voicemail number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-8-9.
You hear that? Nobody could hear what you just said because the music overpowered everything.
Ah, we love the music, so we'll let it slide.